Sai Ram, dear listeners, and welcome back to the studios of Radio Sai Prashanti Nilayam, bringing you live broadcast every Thursday in the Asia stream of Radio Sai. The proceedings in the Mandir ended just now, and the meditative atmosphere created by the Vedic chants and the bhajans still linger in my mind. It's now time for us to get back to the live program scheduled for you for this evening. And this is Ganesh inviting you all for this week's Vedam Tutor. In last week's class, we heard from Sri G.R. Praveena about the modalities of Vedam chanting, wherein he covered points like the clarity of words required for chanting, the importance of intonations, how not to chant the mantras, and so on. Today, we have some more important aspects that Sri Praveena will be covering, but with a difference. We will have the students chanting, and it will be a practical demonstration of the aspects being taught. Once again, we extend our warm welcome to you, sir. Welcome to the studios of Radio Sai for this week's Vedam Tutor, and over to Praveena, sir.
Sai Ram, I feel it is very difficult and tough venture to get into the vast knowledge that's contained in the Vedas. But yet, somewhere we have to begin and try to know at least little bit of the vast knowledge that's present in the Vedic text. And I think today we'll try to learn the correct way of chanting, especially many times we are used to chanting mechanically and sometimes ignoring some of the important aspects while chanting. But let us try to rectify those mistakes and try to chant as correct as possible in our day-to-day learning and also chanting of these Vedic mantras. Of course, we have two of our students here, and let us find out if they have any doubt or clarifications to be done.
So first of all, we hear that we should not chant it very fast, we should not chant very slow, we should not sing. Few aspects are there which we have many doubts regarding. So can you just throw some light on those things?
Yes, as all of us know, the Vedic mantras are written in Sanskrit script. And when we see the alphabets in Sanskrit, aksharas, every akshara has got its own time duration to which it has to be uttered. We have raswaswara, we have dirghaswara. So they have to be uttered to a known limited time, beyond which or short of which they should not be uttered. It becomes wrong. And obviously these Vedic mantras are thus formulated only by the togetherness of all these aksharas, and that's how the mantras have come into existence. When we say raswaswara, a short period of time, dirghaswara, double the time of that. So that's how we are supposed to chant that way. There are many instances or examples we can give on those lines. When we say Om Ganana Antva Ganapati Gum Havamahe, in this small line, when you say Ganana Antva, Ga is actually Raswaswara. Na is Dirghaswara. But you don't chant it Om Ganana Antva. It becomes wrong. Extra prolongation should not be given. So this is true with any mantra, anywhere, any text, Vedic text. To whatever duration it has to be chanted, we have to limit only to that duration. Otherwise, the efficacy of Vedic chanting will be lost. Not merely the duration, but also even the correct pronunciation. Maybe one example, can you chant this particular one small line from Rudram? From Tayanastanuva, can you chant this particular line? Tayanastanuva Shantamaya Girishanta. Please chant that line.
Tayanastanuva Shantamaya Girishanta Vichakashi.
Yes. When you look at this particular line, Tayanastanu Vashantamaya Girishanta Bichakashihi. That's how you chanted. The ending was Bichakashihi. But if you see the script, it is not Bichakashi and Visarga. It is Bichakashi and He. The syllable He. It's not Visarga. So, obviously, you cannot chant it as Bichakashihi. It has to be chanted as Bichakashihi. After reciting or uttering He, slightly can prolong Bichakashihi. But it's not Bichakashihi. So there are many places where you get such intonations, such words, such letters, and they have to be chanted accordingly. And then also we have many of the places where we tend to make common mistakes while chanting. Especially, we see while chanting, we have got swaras, we have got vyanjanas, and whenever the anuswara, that followed by vyanjanas, and the vyanjanas we got various groups, they are called vargas, we got tavarga, chavarga, pavarga, tavarga, etc. So whenever anuswara, that's followed by any of the vyanjana letters, so during a sandhi, what happens is, in between the fifth syllable of that particular varga comes. I think I can illustrate this using some of the examples. We have Tvam Gunatrayatitaha Tvam. Here you can see Tvam. It ends with Anuswara. Followed by Gunatrayatitaha Gu. The Ga letter from the Kavarga Vyanjana. So obviously here Tvam plus Gu, you don't, when you club them, when you chant together, you don't chant as Tvam Gunatrayatitaha, but Tvam Gunatrayatitaha, because the last akshara of this particular kavarga is Kaka Gaga Nga. So Tvam becomes, after Tvam, Ga becomes Nga. Tvam Gunatrayatitaha become Tvam Gunatrayatitaha. Similarly, Sahasra Shirisham Devam, Sahasra Shirisham ends with Anuswara, Devam, Tavarga comes, Tata Dada, Devam. So obviously here, Sahasra Shirisham Devam, because last syllable of this Tavarga is Tata Dada Na. So, Sahasra Shirisham Devam, Na, punch letter comes there. So that's how, this is true with all the vargas under vyanjanas. So that's how it has to be chanted. We cannot chant as gananam tva, it becomes gananantva. Similarly, sahasra shirsham devam, sahasra shirsham devam. Om namo bhagavate rudraya. When you combine it becomes om namo bhagavate rudraya. So that's how it has to be chanted this way. Any other clarifications?
Sir, I have one particular doubt, sir.
Yes.
Any language has a particular grammar.
Yes.
So, what is the difference between, is there any difference between the Vedic Sanskrit and the classical Sanskrit which is being followed now? And how we are supposed to differentiate between the two in present times?
There is a lot of difference between the present day classical Sanskrit and the Vedic Sanskrit, which was written long, long ago. But since these Vedic mantras have not written by any individual because they are apurusheyas, they have merely come into existence by the way of the intuitions which these sages and seers have got during the course of meditation. That's why there is nothing wrong in that. Although it may appear that it may not match with the present day classical Sanskrit grammar, some of the places. But yet, the Vedic grammar or the Vedas, the grammar contained in the Vedas is the final order, final authority, and nobody has the right to change it. Now this kind of final authority, which cannot be changed, and which remains as such, although it appears to be wrong, it's called Arsha Prayoga and Chandasa Prayoga.
Sir, can you just illustrate with some examples, sir?
Yes, I think giving one or two examples here may help us to understand better. We have in the Vedas many places where the adjectives, nouns may be in different linga and vachana. And we have the examples here. Stuto maya varada veda mata prachodayanti pavane dvijata. So here when you say stuto maya varada veda mata, so here veda mata is strilinga, mata is strilinga. Stuto, if you see here, which is this word stuta, which is adjective for mata, is in pullinga. Stuto actually it is stutaha. So stutaha is pullinga. But it is actually used for strilinga, which is mata. But we have to accept it. In Vedas, there are quite a few places you can find such applications, and it has to be accepted, because this Arsha Prayoga, Chandasa Prayoga. Vedamata is, you can see, is strilinga, but stutaha, pullinga. Similarly, very subtle things are also mentioned in the regarding the Vedic grammar. I think that may be one of the reasons why Sanskrit is said to be or considered to be very rich and very precise language. Deva Bhasha it is. For instance, the word Dara, which means wife in Sanskrit, actually this is in pullinga. But this Dara, word Dara, has to be applied, to be used only when it's applied or when it's referred to the wife of a person who is accompanying the husband in the battlefield. That's why it becomes pullinga. Only in such cases, or wives who are accompanying the husband in the battlefield, you don't call them bharya, but you call them dara in pullinga. So that's how dara, although it is wife, referring to stri, but it goes as pullinga. So that's how you can see many of the places where the vibhakti vachanas may not match with the present day classical Sanskrit, but yet they are highly authoritative, what is given in the Vedas, and nobody has right to question these things.
Sir, one small clarification.
Yes.
Whenever we chant Gayatris,
yes,
like Tat Purushaya Vidmahe Vakratundaya Dhimahe, yes, Tanno Danti Prachodayat. The last ending when we end should be Prachodayat or Prachodayat. Like, what should be? There's a lot of confusion there.
Usually, whenever the sentence ends with any halant, it could be T or D, whatever it may be, or T. So such syllables should be chanted not abruptly. It's not Prachodayat. Dante Prachodayat. No. Prachodayatu. So, it has to be chanted so clearly and with a little tinge of tu for it, but it's not chanted abruptly as t. And also, one important thing that we can notice here regarding this great language of Sanskrit is its vocabulary, richness of its vocabulary. There are many root words which actually form different derivatives of the words. That's how the Sanskrit has become very rich language with very rich vocabulary. Maybe around or more than 2000 root words. But when suffixes, prefixes are added to it, we get 3 times more of that number different words. That's how it becomes very rich and meaning also becomes changed. I think one small example I can give you. Dhatu, or the root word har. So when this har is added with some of the prefixes or suffixes. So especially the prefixes is called upasarga. Different meanings will come. Different words will be formulated. Har dhatu, when we add pra, it becomes prahara. When we add sam, it becomes samhara. When we add upa, it becomes upahara. When we add a, it becomes ahara. When we add v, become vihara. You see, all the meanings will change. Upasargena dhatvarto baladanyarta niyate. Praharahara samsara samhara vihara pariharavat. So merely by adding prefixes or suffixes, meaning will change quite distinctly. That's how the richness of the language we can see quite clearly. Even we chant Vedic mantras starting with Om, the pranava. Pranavaha mantranam setuhu. Now this pranava is nothing but Omkara. Now what is this Om? Om has been the highest name of the highest Lord. But this pranava actually is derived from two important root words. One is apr, means vyaptav, sarvavyapti, pervading everything. But the second dhatu is abha, which means rakshani dhatu, it is the one which protects, rakshaka. So these are two root words from which the pranava has been derived. So when we say or take only the second one, abha, rakshani dhatu, it has got many different meanings. Rakshana, gati, kanti, tripti, avagama, priti, pravesha, savana, samitsa, yachana, kirti, vyapti, alingana, dana, bhoga, himsa, vriddhi. All these different meanings are there only for this particular root word, abha, rakshani dhatu. Now this also shows how rich this particular Sanskrit language is. Yes, any other further clarification you can ask.
So one thing regarding the ending of the mantras, yes. Like if you take the example of Rudram,
yes.
Whenever like fourth anuvaka, the fourth paragraph when we end, Namashvabhyashvapati bhyaschavo namaha,
yes.
We should we end it at namaha or should we elongate it a little bit? Like what is the correct way of chanting it?
Again, there is no question of abrupt ending here. Namaha, you are not supposed to end like that. Because when we say Vedic mantra, it should be something like flowing. It's not tough chanting. Gayantam trayati iti gayatri. And mantra, mananat trayati iti mantraha. Or manastranai samayukta mantra mitya vidhiyati. Ma and tra. Ma refers to manas. Tra refers to trana. So concentration and trana, the strength. Both should be applied while chanting Vedic mantras. Which means you are not supposed to make it very rough and tough while chanting. It has to flow. I think maybe I can elaborate a little on this, because that's the beauty of Sanskrit language. If you want to say one dry tree is standing in front of you, in Sanskrit, you say Shushkaha Vrikshaha Agre Tishtati. But same thing can be told in different way, but in same language, Sanskrit language. Nirasa taruriva vilasati purataha. Same thing. So, shushko vrikshastishtatyagre becomes nirasa taruriva vilasati purataha. Both mean the same. But in the first case, actually you are giving a very rough and tough touch for the pronunciation. But in the second part, it's just like flowing. Both mean the same. So, when we chant Vedic mantras, we should ensure that we chant them correctly in a very soothing way, so that the real spiritual and good vibrations should be produced when we chant these Vedic mantras. So, namaha, don't end it abruptly. Namaha, slight elongation can be given at the end of each such the Vedic mantras.
In Narayana Upanishad, sir,
yes,
we have a normal om what we chant.
Yes.
And again in the second paragraph, there is Om comes.
Yes.
What is the actual difference between these two Om, sir? In the chanting, we are, most of the times when I was chanting, I I actually didn't find any difference. But when we actually look at the scripts during the learning process, we find that this is an Omkaram, what we write as that this thing. Another one is Omkaram from the ovals which is taken. So what is the difference between both?
Actually, the way of chanting, and it means the same only. Okay, in both the places, it's Om referring to Pranava mantra only. However, why you're chanting second time? Why it's placed suddenly in the middle of the Vedic mantra? I think it is only because of the importance and significance of the following sentences. Especially if you, what you referred just now. After this Om, the whole, the Panchakshari mantra, Om Namo Om Narayanaya, which is said to be very sacred, very powerful, with all energy and power in it. So before we chant such mantras also, to just highlight the significance of such mantras, or maybe such paragraphs, which are giving introduction and giving elaboration on such mantras, yes, okay, another pranava is added to it. But basically both are same regarding their potency and also way of chanting. And also we have some of the important other norms or the rules and regulations to be followed. And many times actually we ignore them. We don't pay importance to such correct way of chanting. For example, Anuswara followed by Ha, Sa or Sha. You can see there is slight change. For example, when we say Ganana Antva Ganapati Gum Havamahe, question can come. Why not Ganana Antva Ganapatim Havamahe? Why are chanting Ganapati Gum Havamahe? Actually, this is one of the lessons, one of the way of chanting. It's not that all the different classes or sects are chanting same way. There is a Dravidian sect of chanting who may not actually take into consideration some of these things. However, in most of the places, Anuswara, Ganapatim followed by Ha or Sa or Sha, it becomes Gum. So, Ganana Antva Ganapatim Havamahe, because Ha comes later after Anuswara, it becomes Ganapati Gum Havamahe. Similarly, you can see Namah Pagum Savyayacha Rajasyayacha. Namah Pagum, Namah Pam Savyayacha. Sa follows after Pam, Anuswara. So Pagum. Similarly, if you can see Namo Vakkirikebhyo Deva Nagum Hridayebhyo, Ha comes Hridaya. So Namo Vakkirikebhyo Deva Nagum Deva Nam Hridaya. So Deva Nagum Hridaya. Here also you can see such applications coming in such places. So these are other important norms that we are supposed to follow during Vedic chanting.
Sir, one more clarification about Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Then when we are chanting Isavasya Upanishad, there we get it as Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. The difference, I mean, in one we are giving stress for Sha, in the normal chanting, whenever we do any other prayer, we give on Ti. So what is the...
Yes, here you can see most of the Vedic mantras, of course all the mantras end with Shanti, Shanti, Shanti thrice. But if you notice one thing, when we chant them separately, Om Shanti, 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 none of these syllables carry any intonation. But only when we chant them together, then only you can see most of the cases, most of the mantras end with Shanti coming downward. Lower pitch, Anudatta, Shanti, 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 and third one, not coming down. So this is in most of the cases. But in, I think, Ishavasya Upanishad being one of the most important Upanishad, and also said to be very effective and also very meaningful Upanishad, here the Sha gets the lower intonation or the Anudatta, which I feel has come from the ages with the extra significance which is given to maybe this particular mantra. And also if you see the Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate, it should be one Shanti mantra which is carrying the highest meaning, highest Advaitic philosophy. Everything is full. You take full from full and what remains is also full. The highest Advaitic philosophy is mentioned here. Maybe as an exception to signify this, right from those times, the Sha, the first syllable itself, is usually chanted downward. Then, yes.
There is one more clarification. They say that when you chant Vedam, you should not have musical accompaniments. Is it true? Because many times we see people chant with a Shruti box, with a harmonium. What we have heard or what we have read is we should not use any musical accompaniments when we chant Vedam.
Yes. I think what you are telling is applicable for those days. I personally feel. Because even you must have heard people telling you are not supposed to have the script when chanting Vedas. You are not supposed to see the script and chant. You are not supposed to have any musical accompaniment while chanting these Vedic mantras. So during those days, during ancient time, people used to learn these Vedic mantras only by the way of hearing. Listening to the gurus, shishyas used to learn these Vedic mantras. That's why they are called Shruti. Shrutva krati iti Shruti. Only by hearing. So guru mukhena it has come. And even the shishyas used to pass on this Vedic mantras to the subsequent generations. Only by the way of teaching orally and then the shishyas learning. Only by listening. So that's how all the intonations have remained intact through the ages, through the centuries, till now. There's no difference at all. But we should remember one thing. During those days, the shishyas, the pupils, they used to spend a lot of time, years and years together in the ashram of the gurus. In fact, the minimum required time period for a brahmachari, a student, to learn to be in the ashram of the guru and then to learn the Vedic mantras was 12 years, 12 full years. Hey, he never used to do any other work, only Vedic learning. And remember, Vedic learning not merely means by hearting, mugging up some of the Vedic mantras, but also trying to master the Vedangas. So these, not merely Vedangas, but also trying to know the Darshanas, Shat Darshanas. Vyakarana, Shiksha, Chandasu, Jyotisha, Nirukta, Kalpa. So these Vedangas, and apart from that, even Shat Darshanas, they used to learn. So altogether, minimum required time was 12 years as brahmacharis. But of course, there was no limitation regarding that. Those people who did not want to be following the Grihastha Ashrama, did not want to get married, they used to spend 48 years learning under the gurus, mastering all these Vedic mantras, trying to know even the branches of these Vedangas. When you say Vedangas, means grammar, then the etymology or various aspects. See, Siksha, Vyakarana, Chandasu, the meters, Nirukta, Kalpa, Jyotish, all this part of the Vedic learning, it used to be. So during those time, obviously there was no need for the book to be there. Enough time they used to have under the guidance of the competent gurus in the ashram. Only by Guru Mukhena they used to learn, by listening to them. But nowadays you see what has happened. Learning Vedic mantras itself is a very rare thing. And also the correct way of chanting and also the correct way of teaching by a competent teacher, it's very, very difficult to see these things. And obviously, unless we put it in the form of what you call written form, in a paper, in a book form, I think we definitely may have the fear of losing them also. Because we are not spending enough time. We are not spending years together. Maybe in any places, you can see maximum few hours they spend, most of the places, learning these Vedic mantras. That's why, maybe to retain the Vedic knowledge, Vedic scripts intact, with all their intonations intact, maybe using the book and even doing some other job and trying to pick up as much as possible in a short period of time, I think there may not be any wrong in using the book and trying to learn these Vedic mantras.
So thank you, Praveena sir, for throwing so much of light on so many important aspects of Vedic learning. And indeed, it's the grace of our dearest Lord, Bhagavan Baba, who himself is a Veda Purusha, and who has time and again stated that one of his mission statements was Veda Samrakshana, Veda Poshana, and which is he has been doing from the time he took his birth. And over years he has developed our ancient culture. So this is how Swami has developed all of us, all his students, and he has shown us the way to restore the Vedic culture of this glorious Bharat. Thank you, Praveena sir.
Welcome, Ganesh.
Dear listeners, if you do have any queries or doubts regarding how to chant Vedam or how to learn Vedam, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. We would try to answer those questions for you. I repeat, dear listeners, if you do have any queries or doubts regarding how to chant Vedam or how to learn Vedam, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. We would try to answer those questions for you. Now I hand over the mic to Brother Bishu to take over with the Radio Sai Bhajan Tutor.
Thank you, Ganesh, and dear listeners, Sai Ram from Prashantinilayam, the most happening place on the planet. Till now you were listening to the Radio Sai Vedam Tutor, and now it's time for the Bhajan Tutor. You are listening to the Thursday live broadcast straight from the studios of Radio Sai, and I am Team Radio Sai's Bishu, happily at your service. Yesterday we received an encouraging email from a Radio Sai listener by name Priya, who said, "I have been regularly following the Thursday live stream and bhajan classroom. I have no words to express my gratitude to your team. Bhajan singing is definitely a wonderful experience, but knowing the meaning so much in depth adds great value to bhajan singing. Thank you so much for your wonderful efforts. The learning in terms of raga and the meanings explained are wonderful, and the highlight is the meaning interspersed with Swami's messages and experiences that are so relevant to the bhajan. I truly understand and appreciate the amount of efforts by the entire team in providing such well-researched insights. Thank you once again." So this was the email from Miss Priya. I really want to thank her and so many of you, dear listeners, like her, whose encouraging words and critical feedback have always added to our energy and inspiration to make our programs better as we continue to create these as our offering to Bhagwan. So as always, before we get on with this program, let us first offer our deep love at the lotus feet of our beloved Lord, who is truly the music of our lives, the one in whose rhythm we want to walk every step of our lives, the one who makes our lives and our existence worthwhile. Dear Lord, please bless us so that we may always ruminate on your matchless mercy, and mold our lives so that we become instruments through which the divine melody of selfless love and service reaches out to all around. With this prayer, dear listeners, let's get back to music and bhajans, and welcome to yet another episode of Radio Sai Bhajan Classroom. And today we will be learning a soul-stirring bhajan that adores our dear Bhagwan as Krishna, the Lord of Mathura. It is in the language Sanskrit and has 7 lines totally. So we will start by becoming familiar with the lyrics, and then we come to the explanation of the raga, the beat, and the meaning of every word of this bhajan, elucidated with lovely anecdotes and stories. And finally, we will end with a short conversation with Mr. Srinivas Rao, who has been a member of the Prashanti Bhajan group for more than 25 years. He does have some really lovely tales of divine proximity and divine revelations. So there is plenty coming up in the next 45 minutes, and let's begin with the lyrics.
Mathura, Natha, Gopala, Gokula, Bala, Gopala, Goparipala, Gopala, 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 Murali, Manohara, Shama, Gopala.
Now let's move on to the interesting phase of learning the tune of this bhajan. Please do listen keenly to Brother Ravi Kumar, who leads by singing every line slowly without any musical accompaniments. And then when Brother Anirudh follows him after every line, please do try and sing along.
This bhajan is being sung in the scale D Pancham. Mathura Natha Gopala,
Mathura Natha Gopala,
Mathura Natha Gopala,
Mathura Natha Gopala,
Gokula Bala Gopala,
Gokula Bala Gopala,
Gokula Bala Gopala,
Gokula Bala Gopala,
Goparipala Gopala,
Goparipala Gopala,
Goparipala Gopala,
Goparipala Gopala,
Gopala Gopala,
Gopala Gopala,
Gopala Sai Gopala,
Gopala Sai Gopala,
Murali Manohara Shama Gopala,
Murali Manohara Shama Gopala,
Murali Manohara Shama Gopala,
Murali Manohara Shama Gopala,
Mathura Natha Gopala.
And now it's time to dwell a little on the composition of this bhajan, and for this I have with me Brother Ashwath from the university.
Welcome, Ashwath, to this program.
Saram,
All the connoisseurs of music would like to know in which raga is this bhajan based, Mathuranatha Gopala.
This bhajan is set to rag by name Vasanti.
Mm-hmm.
There are very few bhajans in this rag, but it's a very powerful rag.
Mm-hmm.
The notes of the rag will appear like that of Bhupali.
Mm-hmm. Mohanam.
Mohanam. But if you put minor daivat,
Dha.
Mm-hmm. In Bhupali, it becomes Vasanti.
Okay.
Another bhajan which is in this rag is Krishna Madhava. Madhava Krishna.
Okay.
So the notes of the rag, I'll tell.
Sure.
Sa re ga pa da sa. So re is re two.
Yes.
Sa re. Like Mohanam re.
Yes.
Ga ga two.
Yes.
Pa da, that is minor da,
yes.
D1.
Yes.
Okay. In Mohanam it is da da. So minor da.
This is Komal da, and
yeah.
In Mohanam you have Shuddha da.
Shuddha. So we have minor daivat in this.
Yes.
So that minor D adds lot of virah, that kind of feel.
Yes. Is bit of pathos.
The pathos, yeah. Sa da pa. Small sample.
Absolutely beautiful. Maybe you can share with us if there are any other songs apart from bhajans which are based on this raga. You mentioned about Krishna Madhava.
Krishna Madhava is
that's our bhajan.
We have many songs wherein some flash, some portion of the song comes in this raga. But there is, I remember on our album vividly, A.R. Rahman's Janaganamana.
Yes.
So in this album, many artists have sung the national anthem. And before national anthem, every artist has sung an alap, prelude to
okay.
the national anthem. So every artist has sung, he's selected a unique rag.
Mm-hmm.
So Sri Hariharan, he has sung the alap, which is prelude to Janaganamana in Vasanti rag.
Mm-hmm.
I think it goes like, Sala Deshka Salam. Like that it comes.
Wonderful. Can you just sing the first line of Mathuranatha Gopala in Swaras?
Ga ba da ba ga re sa da da re sa. Ga ba da ba ga re sa da pa da re sa sa. Sa re ga pa pa da ba ga da 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 pa pa ga re sa. Sa re ga pa pa da pa ga. Da da re sa da pa pa da re 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 ga re sa da pa da re sa sa pa padari re re ga ri sa da padari sa sa padari sa sa ga ri ga padari sa sa ga ri sa da re sa da ba ga ba da ba ga re sa ga ri sa da re sa ga ri sa da ba ga ga pa da ba ga re sa पद स द रे स स स रे ग प रे ग
Fabulous. There cannot be a better illustration of the raga than this. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
So that was Ashwat explaining the raga. And coming now to the tala, like most other bhajans, this too is set to the 8-bit Kairava tal of Hindustani music, equivalent to Adi talam of Carnatic music. And now let's move on to understanding the inner meaning of each word of this bhajan. And why is this important? During June 1962, in an interview to Mrs. Karunamma Ramamurthy and her sons, Bhagwan stressed on the importance of bhava in bhajans. She recalls what Baba said in her book, Sri Satya Sai Anandadai. Bhagwan said, God does not pay as much attention to swara, raga and tala as to bhava or the feeling. This does not mean that you can sing as you wish. The bhajans should be sung melodiously and rhythmically. Nevertheless, Baba said, God is bhava priya. And Swami emphasized, I want to stress this point, Swami said. I want to stress this point, which is, God is bhava priya, the one who looks for feeling in our rendering more than the technicality of our singing. So it is crystal clear that the sublime feeling with which we render the bhajan is really what touches the Lord, and understanding the meaning helps us to develop that feeling. So let's start with the first line of this bhajan.
Mathura Natha Gopala
Mathura Natha Gopala.
The first word here is Mathura, referring to the place that God chose for his advent as Lord Krishna 5000 years ago. Geographically, it is a city in the state of Uttar Pradesh in present-day India. The second word Natha means master or lord. The third word Gopala is an often used name for Lord Krishna, and it can be split as Go and Pala. The word Go means cow and Pala means to protect or nourish. Lord Krishna was born in Mathura to Vasudeva and Devaki, but was brought up by his foster parents, Mother Yashoda and Father Nanda, who belonged to the cowherd clan of Vrindavan. As Krishna grew up, he too, like other boys of his age, lovingly tended to the cows. He took them for grazing in the pastures and so on. Thus, Krishna is often portrayed as a cowherd boy in portraits and illustrations, etc. And hence, he bears the name Gopala. However, there is a deeper significance to this. Bhagwan once said, Go means beings or souls or individuals. As a Gopala, Krishna keeps the cows away from harm. He encourages them to graze in peace, and he drives them back into the sheds when evening falls on earth. Similarly, Baba explained, individual beings too are under the loving care of God, the God who knows what is good for them and the one who saves them from ruin. There are, of course, several meanings of this word Gopala, and we will explore some more as we go along in this bhajan. So in this line, Mathura Natha Gopala, we call out to the Lord who was born in Mathura. He is the one who lovingly took care of the cows during the Dwapara age by perfectly enacting his role as a cowherd boy of Vrindavan. He is also nourisher of every individual soul in this universe. Let's move on to the second line of this bhajan.
Gokula Bala Gopala
Gokula Bala Gopala.
Gokula refers to Vrindavan, the place where Krishna grew up. It comes from Go, whose meaning we have already seen earlier, and Kula means community or clan. It is interesting that Baba has established two Gokulams or dairy farms, one in Puttaparthi and one in Whitefield. And these dairy farms have not only cows but also other animals. In the early years, on Krishna Janmashtami day, the day celebrating the advent of Lord Krishna, Swami used to visit the Gokulam in Prashantinilayam and shower his abundant love on these adorable beings of the animal kingdom. In the later years, a beautiful event unfolded annually on the birthday of Lord Krishna. Bhagwan allowed the cows, the calves, the rabbits, etc. to be brought into his presence in Sai Kurvanthal on this sacred day. Until she passed away, Swami's pet elephant Sai Geeta used to majestically lead this procession. It was a colorful array because the cows and calves were all decked in beautiful garments. Just looking at them would make one forget oneself. And Baba used to specially bless all the animals and birds. He would stroke the rabbits, feed milk from feeding bottles to the little calves, caress the pigeons and so on. It was indeed a moving sight to see the wordless exchange of love between the Creator and His gentle creation. And this tradition continues till date in Prashantinilayam. All the animals come to the Sai Kurvanthal on the Krishna Janmashtami day. So that is the Lord as Gokula Bala. Bala means child. Hence in this line, Gokula Bala Gopala, we adore the little Krishna who frolics in Gokulam. He is the beloved of even the cows, the birds and other animals. Let's move on to the next line.
Mathura Natha Gopala.
Mathura Natha Gopala.
This is a repeat of the first line of this bhajan, where we adore Krishna as the Lord of Mathura and as the one who lovingly tended to cows in Gokulam. Lord Krishna, the caretaker of all beings. Let's move on to the fourth line.
Goparipala, Gopala.
Goparipala, Gopala.
Here the first word is Goparipala. This is synonymous with the second word of this line, which is Gopala. And we already know the meaning of Gopala. But as I said earlier, there are several meanings of this term, and explaining the inner significance of this on one occasion, Swami said, Gopala is Lokapala and not just a cowherd boy. Go means cow and Pala means he who fosters and protects. Loka means the world. The form he has assumed is human, that of a cowherd boy, but that is all. Really speaking, he is the most auspicious form who liberates one from bondage. And he has in his hands the three weapons, Shakti, Yukti and Mukti. Shakti, power, Yukti means attainment, Mukti means freedom from bondage. Hence, in this line, Goparipala Gopala, we offer our humble gratitude to the Lord who is truly the one who is constantly looking after the welfare of each one of us, of the entire world. Let's move on to the fifth line of this bhajan.
Gopala, Gopala.
Gopala, Gopala.
Again, the word Gopala is sung twice in this line. And although the word Go means cow, Baba has revealed that it also represents our sense organs. Thus, Gopala is he who looks after our sensory faculties. The Gopalas and Gopikas of Vrindavan that we read in the Bhagavat Katha, Baba explained, these Gopalas and Gopikas had offered their sense organs completely to Lord Krishna. O Lord, you please take care of our senses, our mind, take our ego, take our attachments. And thereby, these simple cowherds and maids of Vrindavan raised themselves from the mundane to the level of the divine by offering their every sensory faculty to the Lord. It might be pertinent here to recall the experience of Mrs. Gali Sharada Devi. Miss Gali Sharada Devi. She was blessed to be a contemporary of our Bhagwan in his avatar as Shirdi Baba, and she later came to him in Puttaparthi. Swami affectionately called her Pedda Bottu, meaning big bindi, referring to the big round dot of vermilion that Hindu ladies wear on their forehead. She was a very pious and noble lady and lived in Prashantinilam till the end of her days. She was very attached to Swami, and Baba too reciprocated her love. From her young age, she was very devoted to Lord Krishna, and throughout her life, she was blessed with several divine experiences and visions. After she came to our dear Swami, she did feel the desire to see Swami as her beloved Gopala, but she never asked Baba for this. On one occasion, when Swami was talking to her, she caught hold of Baba's feet and chanted a shloka. The essence of that shloka is, Baba, you are the mother, the father, you are my relative, my friend, you are my knowledge, my wealth, and so on. And she sought refuge in the one who is the indweller of the heart. As she sang the shloka, she was holding on to Baba's feet. And what happened next is something incredible. Let me now read out what Mrs. Pedda Bottu has written herself about this experience. She writes, I closed my eyes and put my head on his feet. I could see his feet up to the knees, and they were covered with yellow silk. I could see six-year-old Krishna with a yellow silk robe and his little feet wearing anklets. And I just lost consciousness. When I regained my senses, I said, Swami, why did you do that? Why didn't you give me full darshan? Why only the feet? And then Baba said, that is enough for you. When I gave you half darshan, you were half dead. If I give you full darshan, you will be fully dead. That is how Baba joked with Pedda Bottu Amma, at the same time revealed his mysterious nature. Dear listeners, let us too hold the soft liberating feet of the little Lord Krishna and revel in the bliss that it confers. Let's move on to the penultimate line of this bhajan.
Gopala Sai Gopala, Gopala Sai Gopala.
In this line, the only new word is Sai, and one meaning of Sai is Sa, meaning divine. It also means Sakaleshwarya, the repository of all wealth and prosperity, all power and wisdom. Sai is the one who is the master of this omnibus opulence, beauty and majesty. Thus in this line, Gopala, Sai Gopala, we call out to the Almighty Lord Sai Krishna. Let's move on to the last line.
Murali Manohara Shama Gopala, Murali Manohara Shama Gopala.
Murali is an appellation of Lord Krishna, but it denotes the flute that he plays on. And why did the Lord choose the flute and not any other instrument? Because the flute is straight. It has no twists or turns. It is simple and hollow. So the Lord picks the flute and breathes into it. The result is divine music that mesmerizes us. If we too are humble and without ego, fully conscious all the time that we are not the doers, then we create an opportunity for the Lord to choose us as His instruments for a facet of His divine mission. The Lord will work through us only when we constantly remind ourselves that it is He alone who is the string puller of this entire divine drama that is our life, and that is this entire cosmos. We are mere actors in this stage. This is the profound lesson that the Murali teaches us. Moving on, the second word is Manohara, which literally means the one who captivates or enchants the heart. And this is such an apt name for Lord Krishna. The third word is Shama, meaning the dark complexioned one, the one who is of the color blue as the rain-bearing clouds. Now, why is Lord Krishna compared to the dark clouds that bring rain? Baba has revealed that anything that is mysterious, vast and unfathomable is represented by the color blue. Since nobody can understand the true nature of the Lord, He is considered to be that infinity. He is portrayed as blue-complexioned. Baba once revealed that Lord Krishna was not blue by the color of His skin. Blue was the nature of His being and of His persona. Hence in this line, Murali Manohara, Shama Gopala, we glorify the Lord who enchants our hearts through the wonderful melodies that emanate from His flute. He is the dark-complexioned Lord who is enigmatic and of infinite vastness. Let us pray to Him to use us as His murali, His instrument to carry out His work. Dear listeners, we have finished grasping the nuances of every word of this bhajan. But before we proceed further, let us capture the essence of this bhajan through a different experience, through a simple visualization technique. We begin by taking a walk in Mathura, Krishna's birthplace. And as we do so, we sing the first line. Mathura Natha Gopala. So we are walking in Mathura and we call out, O Lord of Mathura, O Master, where are you? Won't you give me your darshan? And we think we are probably in Mathura and we are calling out to Krishna, but there is no trace of Him. So we again call out entreatingly, Gokula Bala Gopala. So we are thinking perhaps Krishna is very busy having fun with His playmates in Gokulam. He still does not appear before us, and our mind now begins to think, perhaps He did not hear my cry. Maybe He is after all in Mathura only. Let me call Him once more. And we sing, Mathura Natha Gopala. We look here and there searching for Him, but we don't see His lovely form. And we slowly walk towards the grazing pastures in search of the Lord. And we sing, Goparipala Gopala. We think we will surely find Him there with His beloved cows and His friends, the cowherds. And as we walk, we continue to sing, Gopala Gopala. And we sing it with more intensity. We sing more loud and clear, calling out to Him, Gopala Gopala. And still there is no response. And then we realize that all the walking has worn us out, and we sing, Gopala Sai Gopala. And we are entreating our beloved Sai Gopala, our dear Lord Sai Krishna, to appear before us. But everything seems still. There is no sight of Krishna anywhere, and we feel the pain of separation from Him, and we feel all our efforts are in vain. The agony from the heart rushes out and hot tears are now streaming down our cheeks. Not knowing what else to do, we just close our eyes and we silently, fervently pray to Him. We contemplate on His charming form and we pine for Him. And as we are lost in this prayer and intense yearning, in an instant, suddenly, we feel a slight tap on the shoulder. And when we look back and open our eyes, what do we see? Our Sai Gopala has indeed come. He is right in front of us with His enchanting smile. The little lovable, playful, mischievous Krishna begins to play now on His flute, and we instantly get transported into raptures of joy and ecstasy. This is bliss. Our heart bursts forth, Murali Manohara Shama Gopala. Hey, Murali Manohara Shama Gopala.
He indeed is the enigmatic Lord, the one who is as mysterious and unfathomable as the dark clouds in the sky. The Lord of Lords who eternally engages us with this ethereal music emanating from His magical flute. Dear listeners, we will now listen again to the full version of this bhajan. And now as you listen to this, sing along and visualize this beautiful Lord in your mind's eye, and let us be lost in that divine rhapsody.
With this,
We are now in the last part of this program and it's time for the conversation with Brother Srinivas Rao, an alumnus of Bhagwan's University who has been singing in front of Bhagwan for more than 2 decades now. Sairam, Brother Srinivas Rao, and welcome to the studios of Radio Sai.
Sairam, Brother Prishti, very nice to be here.
You are someone who were blessed by Bhagwan to sing in front of him for more than 25 years. You came to Bhagwan in late 70s, but you got the chance to sing in front of him from 1985. And that is such a long time of being a member of the Bhajan group. Maybe we should start from where it all began. So when and how did you start singing in the Divine Presence?
Yes, brother. I actually was singing bhajans right from my childhood, attending Bal Vikas and Samiti bhajans. And I was familiar with all the Prashanti Nilayam bhajans as I grew up hearing devotee singers like Sri Raja Reddy, Sri yes. Mohan Rao Garu, Sri Pandurang Dikshit, Srimati Jyotsna Reddy, and I don't know if you heard of one Radio Kamlamma.
Mm-hmm.
She used to sing Suprabhatam in the mornings.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the voices that would ring all over the Prashanti Nilayam in every bhajan session during all the festivals.
So this is in the 60s.
Late 60s and 70s.
Early 70s.
Yes. Yeah. Then during my childhood itself, I had a change in voice sometime in 1977. And my voice used to break very often. So then I discontinued.
That's when you become an adolescent and yes, your voice changes.
Yes. And then I stopped singing and I took to some percussion playing so that I keep myself in the
keep
front.
Keep that interest in music.
Interest in music, yes, you're right. And but then when I came to Swami in 1979 as a student, then bhajans are the most important part of your daily routine here. So I used to be just very displeased with myself that I'm not getting any chance to sing. But then in 1985, sometime suddenly, I could hear myself singing lines, continuous lines, without any break in voice. Then I thought maybe my voice is coming back. And then I took a chance to tell Swami one day in the interview room when he called all of us to give us a benedictory advice during my M.Com final year. And I asked Swami, I would like to sing bhajans. Then Swami said, yes, do sing. And that's how it started. Then I decided that, okay, now that I'm a new singer and there are many stalwarts here, I should sing maybe occasionally only, not every day. I took a decision for myself. I'll sing only twice or once in a week. And on the days I sang, I used to sit in the bhajan hall. And the rest of the days, I decided to sit outside the bhajan hall and enjoy the bhajans. That's how it was going on. And one day Swami came during the bhajans. He came out and came near me and asked me to stand up and asked me, oh, why are you not sitting inside the bhajan hall?
Mm-hmm.
Then I didn't say anything. He said, from tomorrow, I should always see you inside the bhajan hall. Otherwise, I will not be talking to you again.
Oh my God, what a blessing.
And from that day till almost the end when Swami left us all, I had not missed a day not sitting in the bhajan hall. And literally all my learning, real learning and education took place in the bhajan hall.
Sitting right in front of him.
Sitting right in front of the Lord, who was merely a picture before I became a student to me. And such a Lord whom I used to just worship in a picture, he's sitting in front of me and I'm singing and enjoying the bhajans.
You never imagined that as a little kid you are singing these bhajans in front of him in the altar and the samitis and worshipping him, and today he is asking you to sing in front of him and he's asking you to never miss sit in front of him.
Yes, for because that is where he is actually shaping us, he's, you know, actually helping us improve our samskaras. And all my shaping in life took place right in the bhajan hall. For over 3 decades, I kept on seeing him, looking at him, and imbibed all that I could just in his presence.
May I ask you to elaborate on this shaping that you said that happened and the learning that happened sitting right under Bhagwan's nose in the bhajan hall?
See, once Pandit Ravi Shankar, sitar maestro, had written an article in the Golden Age. I vividly recall what he had mentioned.
There was a compilation of articles on Bhagwan.
Yes, yes. He said if an artist wants to know where he stands in his field, he should go to Puttaparthi and perform in the presence of Baba. His ego would take a beating. So even if he is a student, these are his early days and he needs to be shaped properly. So there was no place for ego. So that's where I felt that Swami never encouraged any of us to be having any ego or display our individuality even while we are singing bhajans. And then his greatest gesture of compassion is to be willing to sit on the bhajan hall throne and listen to us ordinary singers.
Yes.
At a time when he could have easily had the best of the artists and singers sing for him if he wished so. It is Bhagwan's love that we students have been bestowed this golden opportunity.
Many who have had no training in music as such or anything of that sort.
Yes.
He just gave that opportunity to students.
Yes. And that's how we actually, nothing misses us. We are also observing these kind gestures of Swami. And we don't miss it and we learn these lessons. That's what I meant when I said that's how we were all shaped by him.
Yes.
Even utilizing this opportunity of making us sing in front of him and drive home the lessons.
So that was a conversation with Mr. Srinivas Rao, who after his master's in business administration in Bhagwan's University, joined Baba's super speciality hospital in Puttaparthi to serve in his divine mission, and he continues to work in the hospital till date, even as he enjoys singing bhajans in the Prashantinilayam Mandir. And with this, we have come to the end of the current episode of Radio Sai Bhajan Classroom. We hope you enjoyed it. Please do send in your comments or suggestions to listener@radiosai.org. listener@radiosai.org. It's time now to wind up this episode of Radio Sai Bhajan Classroom. Abhishek is waiting to take over for our 60 minutes of Hindi special, and after this is over, I will be back again at around 8:30, and then we are going to have a fresh episode of Outside, Inside and Deep Inside. And today we are discussing the bridge between Cambridge and Sai Medicare, lessons and impressions of Stephen Notley. Believe me, dear listeners, this is going to be a very revealing experience. A top student from Cambridge was here in Prashantinilayam to learn about healthcare. How was this experience? How did Cambridge come into this picture? And what does this mean to Sai Medicare and to all of us? We will discuss about all this and much more. I am Bishu. Join me again 60 minutes from now for Outside, Inside and Deep Inside. Till then, loving Sai Ram from Prashantinilayam.